This little light of mine, I'm gonna let it shine. This little light of mine, I'm gonna let it shine. This little light of mine, I'm gonna let it shine. Let it shine, let it shine, let it shine. Welcome, Talk Catholic, the website.com. Your host, Tim Kilcoyne. No agendas here, just the straight and narrow. Through Mary to Jesus, the Catholic faith proclaimed and preserved. Hope to see you here every week.
TalkCatholic.com in Advent and the first Saturday of December, which brings us to another interview. But don't forget those first Saturday devotions, please, for Our Lady, especially during Christmas time. Go to confession, go to Mass, say the Rosary, 15-minute meditation on a mystery of the Rosary, please. And you will truly be able to celebrate Our Lady's role, Our Lady's co-redemptrix role in salvation history. Let's remind all Catholics of exactly what we believe about Our Lady as we approach Christmas. We have a wonderful special priest in the Holy Spirit for our first Saturday interview, and his name is Father David Nix. You may have seen him on various podcasts. His own podcast is called PadrePeregrino.com. And he's been on with Taylor Marshall and Grace Force and many other very popular Catholic podcasts. He is a unique gentleman in being a monk missionary. Yes, sirree. Sounds almost like a contradiction, but I think you'll see and hear that it isn't. Let's get right to the interview where we kind of cover all the bases as usual. And it is my honor to have such a holy priest during this Christmas season. Father David Nix.
Hello, Father David Nix. This is Tim Kilcoyne, Talk Catholic, and I have a wonderful priest, faithful to magisterial teaching. I feel like I have to say that. Father David Nix, maybe, Father, without diving into points unknown, give us a little quick bio on who you are and what you're up to these days, and then we'll go from there.
Thanks, Mr. Kilcoyne. Hope you're doing well. God bless you. And hey, I agree with you. It's too bad that you have to make a qualifier in front of priests that were actually Catholic. But that's really it. That's apparently the showstopper in my life, is that I'm actually Catholic. I wouldn't even need to put any adjectives in front of it, like traditional or radical or anything like that.
Yeah.
Just a Catholic priest. And that's apparently enough to be controversial these days. So I was born in 1978 in Denver. Went to Regis Jesuit High School, then I went to undergrad out near you at Boston College.
Oh no!
Told me off the air. Yeah, exactly. Now in retrospect, we say BC stands for barely Catholic. at the time, I had just had a conversion to what I call EWTN Catholicism. You know, just the basics, and had just discovered Mother Angelica and everyone right before I went to Boston College. Again, this is right between Regis Jesuit High School and 1996-97. I graduated Boston College pre-med in the year 2000.
Pre-med.
Then worked as I was a EMT out there in Somerville, Everett, and Chelsea in the late 90s, and then returned to Denver. I was a paramedic here, and then I worked for Focus Fellowship of Catholic Universities.
Beautiful.
First Focus missionary ordained. And then was looking at either getting married to somebody or entering the Franciscan Friars of Renewal. And turns out neither happened. I returned to the Archdiocese of Denver under Archbishop Shafi, where I entered seminary in 2004.
Okay.
I was ordained in 2010 and have been a priest 15 years.
Beautiful. God bless.
I did mostly the new sacraments the first half and mostly the old sacraments the second half.
Yeah.
And I'm currently a diocesan hermit. I wrote into my rules some use of the apostolate and traveling, so they hesitantly agreed to that. And so I'm kind of, the best way, when I introduce myself to people at airports, the best way is just to say I'm a monk missionary, even though
it's I love it. I'm laughing because I feel like I'm like your lay brother.
Oh, awesome.
Never married, single, celibate, the whole bit, many years in ministry, and I feel like I'm in a little lay hermitage here in southern Maine.
You know, I started my blog and my channel called Padre Peregrino. It sounds obviously very dorky in English, Father Pilgrim, but
yeah.
I just started it as a little travel blog. I didn't expect it to be, you know, an agent of church reform, but like I said at the beginning of our interview, it's just too bad that it's a showstopper that a priest is actually Catholic these days. But that's really all that's interesting about me, is that I'm a Catholic priest in a time when most priests aren't Catholic anymore.
Well, I mean, you know, what we have in common is our Boston College background. Myself in the late 70s, you graduating in 2000, is it?
2000, yeah. 96 Regis High School, 2000 Boston College.
Okay, okay.
Yeah.
So, you know, one place we can go, because you struck my interest in looking at your podcast with Taylor Marshall on the 10 signs of narcissism. And I do have a wonderful priest friend. He's elderly now, but quick as a whip. And he, Father John is his first name. And he's fascinated also by this topic, because in the confessional, you're in a pickle sometimes as to trying to figure out, you know, is this something mental going on, or is something more sinful? And before starting this interview here today, I went into my garage where I have many of my undergraduate books, and I just wanted to take a quick glance at them. And again, this is the potpourri of, you know, Rosemary Ruther and Gabriel Moran and Tom Groom and Richard McBrien and Charlie Curran. And I'm thinking to myself, are any of these faithful to magisterial teaching? I didn't know at the time as an undergrad theology major that they weren't faithful to imagine, but now I know for sure, right?
Yep.
And
yeah, I don't know all those names, but Charlie Curran is obviously the most famous, who down at Catholic University, part of the church's teaching on Sixth and Ninth Commandment issues, on contraception. That was a very interesting chapter of American Catholic history for sure.
Well, you know, and as an undergrad, I remember a phrase, because I was like a kind of a specialist in theological ethics, and I remember the buzz phrase that was circulating at that time. An act can be objectively wrong, but subjectively defensible.
Yes.
Defensible. Right. And all through the years, I said, you know, there's something not right about that phrase. Subjectively understandable, perhaps, but not defensible. Can you dive into that? Because it gets us right into the real issue here, I think, which is sin versus dysfunction. Where did sin go? It was 1959. The book was called Whatever Became of Sin by psychiatrist Carl Menninger. And he traces historically the loss of the word from our colloquial vocabulary, you know. But, I mean...
Well, yes, Tim. So,
go ahead.
Right. And, you know, I saw that coming, too. I didn't exactly know how to answer that when I was an undergrad at Boston College.
Yeah.
But by the time I was halfway through seminary, I really saw, talking to older modernists and older married couples who used to be Catholic but, you know, weren't really Catholic, I realized the trick that had happened in the 1970s was really all around this word conscience.
Okay.
And what I wrote my thesis on was exactly that, that many modernists, many liberal priests, the only line they know from St. Thomas Aquinas is that an erroneous conscience must be followed. Now, he did write that, but he didn't mean it the same way that modernists mean it. And so where people took this, I'll just give you a very practical example of what happened to a lot of married couples in the 70s and 80s.
Please.
I'll try to keep it, if not G-rated, at least PG radio. There's kids listening.
But, thank you.
You know, a lot of married couples would go to confession in the 80s and say, you know, we're on the pill, and the priest would say, is that in union with your conscience? Does that gel with your conscience? And someone in the confessional would say, like, I mean, I guess so, Father. And so then he would break out that single line from St. Thomas Aquinas that an erroneous conscience must be followed. And so what happened then is that way the priest somehow thought he could, you know, play a game with God, that he's not going to answer to God at the end of time for actually giving a green light to contraception.
Yeah.
And then the married person somehow can leave there and say, hey, honey, the priest actually said we can stay on the pill.
Right.
And so what happened is conscience became this linchpin for every single possible sin.
Yeah.
And it's just a cousin, it's just a corollary of what you said. You can admit something's objectively wrong, but subjectively it's either defensible or you can overlook it. But notice what's happened since the 1970s, 1980s, where you could say it was objectively wrong, but subjectively defensible.
Yeah.
Nowadays, I mean, the Vatican is going to be welcoming an LGBT pilgrimage in the next 48 hours. Mm-hmm. Now, the next iteration of subjective theology, yeah, is that the subjective, yeah, that was put on the same, yeah, to the same level as the objective in the 70s and 80s, now it's actually overshadowed the objective,
yeah,
to the point, and this has to be pre-apocalyptic at this level of apostasy.
Very good.
Vatican is going to openly welcome an LGBT pilgrimage,
yeah,
in the next 24 hours.
Unbelievable.
How is that not the outcome of, yeah, placing conscience ahead,
yeah,
of divine revelation? And not just divine revelation, natural law. We've put conscience, which, yeah, is essentially just feelings. They're not even actually talking conscience.
Right.
They're just saying feelings and concupiscence and your own habit of sin,
yep,
now trumps not just divine revelation, but even the natural law.
Yeah,
who's behind that?
Yeah, the devil himself.
Yeah, the devil himself. It's so satanic.
Yeah, I'm thinking of, what was it, 1967, those the Land O'Lakes Agreement, Catholic presidents,
exactly,
making a statement about, you know, academic freedom trumps magisterial teaching?
Exactly. Exactly.
I mean,
that was a big deal. That changed everything. And I think even when I was at Boston College in the late 90s, the entire board or whoever's in charge of that was mostly lay people. The Jesuits handed over power.
Right.
And I'm sure if you asked them why did you hand over power to lay people? Not that I trust the Jesuits more than lay people. I'm saying it's a fact. But they would certainly point to the Land O'Lakes deal.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, at that point, the Pope had every right to just strip Catholic from every university that maintained that, correct?
He should have. He absolutely should have.
And also, remember Pope Benedict the 16th was pushing for that mandatum to be signed, right? That never got signed. I think Creighton University was the only one that actually signed it.
Right, interesting.
Yeah, I mean, every Jesuit university in the country pretty much rejected that.
Interesting. Now, I remember the mandatum, but I don't remember the outcome of who signed it and who didn't.
On top of that, I'm thinking of a study done a few years back by the Newman Institute where, you know, they were talking about this quote, you know, something like 268 Catholic colleges, universities, but according to their criteria of the thermometer of Catholicity, only about 30, we had about 38 or something that are still authentically Catholic in every dimension, cognitive, effective,
yeah,
et cetera, you know?
Now, I mean, I think we can count on one hand,
yeah,
the universities that are actually still teaching Catholicism, and even those have numerous heretical teachers at them.
Let me ask you, because I feel like I'm in a pickle half the time by just talking about this. I'm maintaining the position that I'm of a firm belief that over all these decades, you know, you kind of get the leadership you deserve. It's two to tango here. The laity kind of made a mass exodus from the church, the baby boomers in particular. And during that time, you know, all hell broke loose, literally, in your theological institutes, seminaries, et cetera, et cetera. Okay, so this is what did happen. And now we have enough historical retrospect, and especially with the airwaves and you know, you can just call up videos of the past like we never could before. We know, we can know what went wrong. So is it not important to lay bare the historical of what you and I are doing right now to make it clear that this can be undone? And that we can get back to Holy Mother Church and her teachings again? Or am I, you know, is it hopeless? I mean, you know.
I mean, you know, that's what I go back and forth with a lot on my own writing and my own podcast. I think there's only two possibilities, and
yeah,
I really don't know which of these two. But if you look at private revelation,
yeah,
private revelation, like the really solid private revelations, Our Lady of Fatima, Our Lady,
yeah,
of Good Success, Our,
yeah,
Lady of La Salette,
yeah,
not the new goofy stuff, but if you look at the really solid private revelation in light of public revelation, which is the Bible and the Magisterium,
yeah,
if I line these two things up, I can only come up with two possibilities. Maybe some of your listeners can come up with three, four, five, but I can only come up personally with,
yeah,
two.
Okay.
We look at, like, Blessed Holzenauer. He was a mystic in the 16th century, talked about the seven ages of the church. And if his view of the church is correct, we are at the end of the fifth age of the church. We're going to come into the sixth age, which is what Our Lady of Fatima said would be the era of peace, and Our Lady of La Salette said that period would be a period of great harvest of souls. Billions, not millions, but billions of people would become Catholic. And yet, Our Lady of either La Salette or Good Success, I think it was Our Lady of La Salette, said that would be a period of only 25 years.
Oh.
And then we enter the seventh age of the church, which is very, very, very short. It's just 3.5 years. It's the reign of the Antichrist. And then we have the return of Christ, the general judgment at the end of the world. And so many people, most traditionalists I respect, hold to the Holton Hours view that we are at the very edge of the fifth age. And then we're going to see this massive, this is going to be the triumph of the Immaculate Heart of Mary.
Yeah.
This is the era of peace. This is what Our Lady La Salette calls the Great Harvest. It will only last to the next 25 years. You can line this up with, you know, millions and millions of Muslims are going to come into the faith.
Okay.
Probably Russia plays a part in this, but, you know, Russia, once she's consecrated validly by a valid pope to the Immaculate Heart of Mary, we're going to see Russia. Mary said Russia's conversion would be very fast.
Okay.
That's not to Eastern Orthodoxy. Now, it doesn't have to be to Western Catholicism.
Yep.
Most likely it's to Eastern Catholicism.
Okay.
Right? But, so, I don't know. That's one of the two possibilities. The other possibility is this is just the great apostasy.
Yes.
That was prophesied that there would be a great falling away.
Yeah.
And then Christ just returns. And
yes.
In that sense, we are in pre-apocalyptic days, and we could very well see the return of Christ in our lifetime, even in the next year.
It's unbelievable,
yeah. You know, every time I talk like this, some smarty pants out there say, oh, but Jesus said you don't know the day or the hour. And it's like, yeah, I know. But he didn't say you don't know the decade, right?
Okay. or not read the signs of the times.
Exactly. I don't claim to know the decade, as you can
right.
tell from the two theses I just put forward. But if you read Matthew 24, we have a whole list of things we're going to see at the end of the world that was not in previous difficult times in the church. You know, people say, well, there's always been difficult times in the church.
Right.
But we've never had someone on the church here worship a Pacamama statue. We've never had
exactly.
to tell priests to get to bless gay blessings.
Exactly.
That has never happened
right.
in 2,000 years of history. So people that say, oh, we've always had hard times. No, we are checking the list off. Matthew 24 that we've never seen before.
I agree with you.
And we will continue to check that list off right here with Father Nick's next month. This is WQPH Radio 89.3 FM as we begin a new book review. And we'll start with the book, Something Light, Terror of Demons, Reclaiming Catholic Masculinity with Kennedy Hall. Well, a co-worker of this radio station suggested I do something special on behalf of Charlie Kirk. And rather than just one show, I thought I'd do a whole book review in his honor, dedicated truly to all good men. And that includes our non-Catholic brothers and sisters, because to be a man has a few common denominators, and boy, did he live them out. I wish I could have got to meet him. He reminded me of the way I conducted my high school classrooms years ago in that straight-on Socratic style and dignifying the input of your students, yet clarifying, and he used that word often, clarifying God's truth, and be sure that they know the road to travel. Well, again, in his honor, and St. Joseph's most especially for sure, I'm going to start with Terror of Demons, Reclaiming Traditional Catholic Masculinity
by Kennedy Hall.
And I have a few other books that I'll be going back and forth with in doing this whole series on hopefully really calling to attention the men out there and what your spiritual responsibilities truly do entail, whether they're being lived or not. Needless to say, in the society we are living in right now, clearly they're not. And I think you'll find that so much goes back to good old Adam and Eve and how things really did get skewed.
And we live out that original sin in every generation.
But from the back of the book, there's an accolade. I just thought it was excellent. It said, Terror of Demons isn't a book about St. Joseph, though he plays a leading role. Terror of Demons is an instruction guide for Catholic men to become
a terror of demons
in a world filled with lukewarm and weak men. This book is the last thing the demons want to see in man's hands. Get a copy. Terrorize the demons. Save the world. So in that Holy Spirit, I wanted to start with the introduction from Kennedy Hall, author, and he tells a little story that's apropos for where we are right now.
He says, it was the first week of December, and this is what happens in southwestern Ontario snowbelt. We were playing on artificial turf. A snowplow was used to clear off the field in order for us to play any game. For any Americans reading this, you should imagine the most stereotypical scene of Canadian football as we played football in sub-zero weather with sidelines marked by walls of snow. It was an incredible game. We won, and the following week we went on to win a Western Bowl championship at a much warmer indoor venue in Toronto. What does this story about high school football have to do with Catholic masculinity? Well, I am more concerned with the three men I saw kneeling at Mass than I was with the game. You see, these were the three coaches, our head coach and two assistants. These three men were giants to me, not only because they were physically imposing football coaches, but also because they were true leaders. They commanded my respect, and I would have done anything they asked. These men were Roman Catholic men. I didn't grow up in a family that practiced the faith. In fact, I barely remember going to Easter or Christmas Mass as a child, except perhaps with my
Nono and Nana.
May God rest their souls, grandmother and grandfather. My mother is an Italian immigrant. My father descends from English Catholics. In typical post-Vatican II fashion, the older generation was pious and the boomer generation had more or less given up on the faith a long time ago.
A familiar story?
My mother has kept the faith to a degree and I pray for her to become a consistent practicing Catholic. My father, who was a Latin Mass altar server for his whole life until the 1970 recovation of the Mass, comes to church when our children receive sacraments. I love my father and I pray he will find his way home so we can spend eternity together. In fact, I have joked with him that my wife and I seem to have a new child every year because it seems he has to step into a church at least annually for a baptism. In any case, I grew up with nothing more than a vague cultural Catholicism and a less than ideal Catholic education. In fact, my education was so feeble that I distinctly remember a religion teacher in grade 10 saying that we should not think of the Holy Bible as true necessarily, but as a book with really good messages. That's right, a secondary school teacher told us, his students, that the Holy Bible shouldn't be thought of as true. Despite the lack of religious formation and the fact that I was leading a relatively sinful life, the image of those men kneeling in prayer was somehow still etched into my brain. In my early 20s, while applying to teachers' college, the memory of these men kneeling in prayer was invaluable in my reconsideration of the faith. At any rate, at this time, I was essentially a lapsed Catholic and a secular humanist. I was not an atheist in the truest sense of the word, even though I tried to be, God forgive me. Like many men, I held that Catholicism was superstitious and out of touch with the modern world. I believed I was much smarter than people who were fooled by religion. I was arrogant, and although I was academic, I was foolish. Despite my arrogance, in spite of my foolishness, I knew there was something to Catholicism, something that pulled on heartstrings. I couldn't bring myself to believe that I was above these men who believed the faith and who had done so much for me. Cutting through the fog of my pretentious worldview was a sliver of integrity. I had many vices, and I was not living in a state of grace. I was not on my way to heaven, but somehow I still believed in some vague notion of history and tradition. I knew that gratitude had to be extended to my ancestors, and that somewhere deep down, I wasn't as smart as I thought I was. I owed it to those three coaches and others to give the faith a second look. I wanted to be a high school teacher. I wanted to be a coach. In essence, I wanted to be like them. I couldn't bring myself to believe that these men were somehow foolish. The memory of these three men on their knees made them stand tall in my mind. My conversion was at times slow and at other times lightning fast, as these things tend to be. Years later, I now find myself a rosary-praying, Latin Mass-attending Catholic father of four who hopes to share the faith that saved his soul. It is a mystery to me how I arrived here. And I guess I will see all the dots connected when, God willing, I share in the beatific vision. Until then, I cannot ignore the fire in my soul that compels me to do all I can to inspire other men to embrace the Catholic faith. Our culture is effeminate, our men are soft, and our souls are being cast into hell at an alarming rate. Men spend more time staring at evil images on their phone than they do staring at the cross or an icon of the Most Blessed Virgin. Men are weaker than they have ever been, and our civilization is perishing before our very eyes as a result. We have given in to feminism, religious indifferentism, scientism, and paganism. We defer to every other ism besides the only true ism, Catholicism. It has been a long time for men to wake up, stand up, grow up, and man up. We need more than mere men. We need traditional Catholic men. The highway to hell is an 8-lane expressway at this point, and it is time for men to wake up and smell the sulfur. For wide is the gate and broad is the way that leadeth to destruction.
Matthew chapter 7, verse 13.
The saying of Jesus Christ could be the motto of our society, and it is the best descriptor of the plight of men today. We are gallivanting down the wide path. We are walking off a cliff into the depths of eternal hellfire. We don't even realize it because we won't stop to look up from our evil images on our iPhones. Our Lord told us that many will walk the path to destruction. Do you know where you are headed? Well, we do right here at WQPH Radio 89.3 FM.
Thank you, Charlie Kirk, for showing us what a real man does indeed look like. And he follows Jesus Christ. And another great father, St. Joseph and Our Lady. Have a great week. God bless. Feast of the Immaculate Conception, December 8th.
Let your light shine. That is what it's all about here at WQPH Radio 89.3 FM. But we need to hear your story. You want your voice to be his voice. That is making the faith known to others. Please, my number is 877-625-3727. Tim Kilcoin, talkcatholic.com. St. Mother Teresa told us, your ministry is your work right where you are. Grab on to this microphone. God bless.